been tasked to preach today on Esther chapter 7 and 8. However, we're going to focus on chapter 7, and I'm going to talk about chapter 8 in the sermon today. So the king Haman went to Queen Esther's banquet, and as they were drinking wine on the second day, the king asked Queen Esther, "What is your petition? It will be given to you. What is your request? Even up to half of the kingdom, it will be granted." So then Queen Esther answered, "If I have won your favor, O king, and if it pleases the king, let my life be given me. That is my petition, and the lives of my people, that is my request. For we have been sold, and I and my people, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. If we had been sold merely as slaves, men and women, I would have held my peace. But no enemy can compensate for this damage to the king." Then King Ahasuerus said to the Queen Esther, "Who is he and where is he? Who has presumed to do this?" Esther said, "A foe and an enemy, this wicked Haman." Then Haman was terrified before the king and the queen. The king rose from the feast in wrath and went into the palace garden, but Haman stayed to beg his life from Queen Esther, for he saw that the king had determined to destroy him. When the king returned from the palace gardens to the banquet hall, Haman had thrown himself on the couch where Esther was reclining. And the king said, "Will he even violate the queen in my presence, in my own house?" As the words left the mouth of the king, they covered Haman's face. Then Harbona, one of the eunuchs in attendance on the king, said, "Look, the very pole that Haman has prepared for Mordecai, whose word saved the king, stands at Haman's house, 50 cubits high." And the king said, "Hang him on that." So then they hung Haman on the pole that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then the anger of the king abated. Now, I'm in the process of moving, and I don't know if you have ever had a pile of wires that have been tangled, and you have to get one wire that you know is in this massive cobweb of wires. How many people have ever been in that situation before? Yeah. So I'm constantly finding these different wires. I'm trying to untangle them, and you think you've got the wire, and then no, it's kind of again creased in another wire. And it can sometimes, you can be there for a good 20 minutes trying to untangle one wire out of these wires. Now, I don't know about you, but it can, when you look at the world stage at the moment, it can feel like there's so many wires tangled up. There's so much going on. So much going on in the world where you're just trying to work out, okay, God, what are you doing in this part here? I can't seem to work it out. And that's just on the world stage. When you then get to your own life and you've got issues with family members, you've got issues at work or finance, and you're just trying to work it out. The message that I've come today to share with you, and it's been given to me from the title given, is a day of reckoning. Brothers and sisters, I want to be able to encourage you today to say that God is on the case. God is working it out. Turn to the person next to you and say, "God is on the case." Turn to them again and say, "God is working it out." We set the scene. You've set the scene over the last couple of weeks as you've been looking through the book of Esther. And just to remind you that the Hebrews are currently under occupation. They're being held in captivity. It's not a rosy life that they find themselves in. They have no sort of permission to work on the land without it being granted to them. They have been transported from everything that they know. And again, the core central belief of Judaism at that time is that they are, God's presence was where the temple was. They're not able to worship God. They're not able to worship God. And the words, how can we sing the Lord's song in a strange land, come to mind. For some of us who have come over from different countries, it can often feel like you're in a strange land. And that something of those words originate and kind of, I guess, kind of hold within your experience of being here in the UK. They were under occupation. They had no rights to their land. They were under the king's rule. And we know of the story because you've been looking at it. Esther is being brought into the palace because the previous queen stood up and made a decision to not have her virtue taken or to be dismantled at the king's request. So Esther is brought into the scene and becomes the next queen. And then she has a situation where her people, because of one man, are now under threat of extermination. I don't know about you, but there are times in my own experience where it seems dark, where it seems like there's nowhere to go. To go forward, you need the strength to go forward, and you're like, I'm not sure I've got the strength to keep going. But you know you can't go back. You know you can't camp out where you are. You have to go forward, but you're looking at the challenge and what's going on, and you just don't know if you've got what it takes to keep going. And you can feel trapped. I'm wondering if Esther here feels trapped. She has a situation where if she remains silent, she has the potential of getting killed. If she remains silent, her uncle, her cousin will get killed. Her people will get killed. But if she goes forward and petitions the king, she also may be killed. But Esther, I don't know how she knows this, but Esther digs deep and she says, my help must come from God. My help must come from God. She cries out. She positions herself. She positions those around her to say we must seek God for his wisdom. We must fast. I want to look at this with you today. Esther's help, Esther's hope empowered her love for her people. Turn to the person next to you and say, Esther's hope empowered her love for her people. Help. Hope empowered her love for her people. Her hope. It's interesting that we read Psalms and Moses read a psalm for us, and I would affirm that. It's so important to read the Psalms. We often feel like we're isolated and no one knows of our experience. But brothers and sisters, if you read a Psalm or two, you recognize that you're not the only one in human history that has had a dark day. Psalm 121, verses 1 and 2. I lift up my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. There is something about when you're trapped, when you feel like you have nowhere to go, when your own strength cannot accomplish the outcome you wish to have. And you then have to turn to God when you're at the end of your rope. Some of us are very intelligent. Some of us are very well off. But there comes a time at certain points in life where no wealth, no intellect can accomplish some of the things that you know need to happen. Hope is looking up. Help rightly directed upwards, directed to the maker of the heaven and the earth. I wonder if right now, if you could just look up for a moment. And just that very physical action of looking up, that kind of getting out of ourselves and looking up. We know that necessarily God isn't necessarily up in the clouds, right? But that very action of looking up, movement of our body, our being, focusing on the one who has our very best interest in mind. Hope. Esther hoped. She decided to make a decision to look to God, to encourage people to fast and pray for the outcome. Hope empowers. And we look at, if we look at Proverbs 2, verses 6, 8, and 10, and it reads, "For the Lord grants wisdom from his mouth, it comes knowledge and understanding. He guards the paths of the just and protects those who are faithful to him. Then you will understand what is right, just, and fair, and you will find the right way to go. For wisdom will enter your heart, and knowledge will fill you with joy." I wonder if Esther knew that if she just turned to God, trusting in God, God will provide the wisdom. Because her case that she would bring was one that was just. Brothers and sisters, I want to challenge you. There are times in life, maybe even in your current life, where you need wisdom. Turn your focus, turn your eyes, look up to the maker of the heaven and the earth. Third point, love for people. Her hope empowered her love for people, her people. Leviticus 19:18, "Do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against anyone among your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord." And it's interesting that Mordecai challenges Esther, doesn't he? He said, if you remain silent, you don't know if you're going to be safe. And it's in that moment, I'm wondering again, there's something about even this passage in Leviticus that is encouraging her to love her neighbor as herself. To love her people, to be willing to lay down her life for her people. Esther's hope empowered her love for her people. And we know what happens then in chapter 7, don't we? So she gets the wisdom and knowing what to do. She puts on not just one banquet, but two. Now, some of us would be like, you know what? I've got faith. I'm going to go in. Yes, I'll put on a banquet, but I'm going to make my request. But she knows the king, you see. She knows what's happened to the previous queen. She knows how he operates being around him. And she has this wisdom in recognizing that not making the request on the first go is smart. Not making it on a second go is smart. But waiting again to the third time. So she puts on this banquet and then her man comes in and with the king, and then she makes her petition and reveals her petition and her request. And her man is in desperation. Now some commentators have made connections with the fact that could Esther at the petition of her man saved him? And maybe she could have petitioned the king to say, have mercy on him. I don't know. But what is clear from how the story is told, for what we have in front of us, is that Haman's plans have been turned upside down. Haman's plans have been turned upside down. What a beautiful God we serve. The protection, the God who is in the midst of her citadel, the God who stands as a refuge, as Psalms 91 paints the picture. He is the refuge for his people, those who seek justice, those who seek to gain his wisdom. He is their refuge. And Haman's plans, the pole that he had set up for Mordecai, is used for him to be killed. But I have a conundrum when I read this text. Because if we simply take what happened then and apply it now, we will only love the people who are in our boundaries. And I'm challenged by what Jesus has to say. And Jesus has something to say. He's speaking to the teachers of the law and to his disciples. He says, love your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. The second command is like unto this. Love your neighbor as yourself. There is no command greater than these. And then Jesus goes into saying, telling them what? A story about the Good Samaritan, the story that we're all probably really familiar with. And the interesting thing about the story of the Good Samaritan is that it's a Samaritan who helps a Jewish person. Jesus flips the story on its head, saying that actually your love for the other, your neighbor, is beyond your ethnic boundaries. Uh-oh. Some of us can only love people or go above and beyond for people that sometimes look like us. Some of us, our love boundary stops at our age group, even in church. How are you loving the next generations? The love that Jesus takes from Scripture, takes from Esther's example, enhances it and says, the love that I'm calling you to engage in is a love that goes beyond the boundaries. That your people is all people if you seek to follow me. And we have this picture of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane wrestling, saying, God, if you can take, Father, if you can take this cup from me, take it from me, but nonetheless, your will be done. He's seeking help from the Father, seeking a hope that empowers him to love others who don't even look like him, that those that he will not physically meet on this earth. A love that loves beyond boundaries. Brothers and sisters, this web of wires that is in the world at this time, is a web of self-centeredness, a web of self-protection. The language of security, the language of there isn't enough resources. It's a love that seeks to love within a boundary. And the love that I see in Jesus is one that is not caught up by boundaries. Because everyone is created in the image of his Father. Turn to the person next to you and look at them. Look at them. Can you see the image of God on their face? Because it's a really deep thing, and it's something that I challenge myself with constantly. If their image of Christ is on them, they are very representations of Christ himself. Is there anything that you wouldn't do for them? Jesus, in the closing chapters of his life, speaks to the disciples. He's just talked about the 10 bridesmaids, and then he goes into the scene of judgment again. And he says that he separates the sheep and the goats, doesn't he? And what does he say to the goats? Because they're doing all these wonderful works. They're coming to a Sunday service. They are singing high praise. They are looking after the resources. They're casting out demons. They're doing all the things that mark a Christian out. But he tells them to depart from him because they did not see his image on those that were hungry. those who were thirsty, those who were imprisoned and oppressed, those that were naked. I wonder where those people are today. Who's naked without clothes? Who's thirsty and has had their water cut off? Who's hungry and hasn't got access to eating? I wonder what Jesus would have to say. A story that has personally always challenged me is this woman's story right here, Immaculée. And she's written an amazing book. I'd encourage you to read it. It's a book called Left to Tell. And she tells her very intimate personal story of the experience of the Rwandan genocide, which took place between the 7th of April and the 15th of July in 1994. If you've seen Hotel Rwanda, I'm sure you have some knowledge of this. And she tells the story of being trapped in a pastor's house with a bunch of other women for 91 days as she sought refuge from the Hutu majority in Rwanda who were killing the Tutsi minority and other moderates across the political spectrum. And as you listen to her story, as you read her story, the trauma that one must have at your very existence being threatened by another people group, beyond no other reason than your skin or the way you talk or the way you look. And as a little girl, she talks about how her family are all massacred. And she's in this room, this bathroom with no one other than a bunch of strangers. And there for 91 days. And she comes out of this experience and she says after, she explains about her faith and how God keeps her and how God helps her resist the temptation to do to those who have done sin against her. And it moves her into forgiveness. It moves her into forgiveness to love those that sought to exterminate her. The power of the cross. The power of Jesus' love for us. Brothers and sisters, we're in a time that if we want these webs of wires to be untangled, we need a love that's not by our might nor our power, but by the Spirit. We need the Spirit. We need to be praying for the Holy Spirit to come to enable us to love. And just if you want to say that you want love and forgiveness and reconciliation in the Middle East, I want to encourage you to take the plank out of our own eyes. Who do you need to love in your own circumstance? What family members do you need to love? What work colleagues do you need to love? What church members do you need to love? Before I finish, I want to encourage you to turn into groups of three or four and identify a group or individual beyond your boundary that you require help. Hope, empowered love for people. Who are those people that you in your life require help for? 5 minutes, if you turn to the person next to you. And just as you bring your conversations to a close, maybe spend some time seeking the Spirit and ask for the Spirit to empower you with hope to love those people. I just really want to encourage you, as I was praying for you this morning, there's a sense that the Spirit wants to pour out His love on us. Did you know that a butterfly in one area of the world can change the wind system in another part of the world? It's scientifically proven. Butterfly effect. Search it. I want to encourage you that actions that you take here can have an impact even in the Middle East. So your cry here for help can impact that region and across the world.